Pint Glass Football Podcast is presented by Better Edge, giving the edge back to the bettors with no fee sports betting. At BetterEdge.com, you, not the books, set the price of betting lines so you can make bank with no VIG or sportsbook fees. Better Edge is available in 45 states for real money sports betting. Create an account and use code PGF for $10 on your first order. Play the game without getting played at BetterEdge.com.
Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football, where we drink beer and talk football. If you're new to the show, hit that subscribe button. What's up, PGF Nation? I'm your host, Brad Fowler, and McKenzie Brewing is still the official beer of Pint Glass Football. We're excited to have them on board again for Season 4. Got a great show today. We've got more draft grades to get to, and today I grade the NFC South. And just like last week, I'll tell you each team's best pick and worst pick. I also have a great in-depth interview with Mark Dolgarian of NFL Media, which includes NFL Network and NFL.com, to get his perspective on the NFL draft. And the NFC South guys had two teams that I think crushed the NFL draft and two teams that had absolutely terrible drafts and got my worst grades yet. So let's crack a cold one and kick this off. All right, I want to start with a team that I think crushed this draft, and that's the Atlanta Falcons, a team that a lot of media and draft analysts have given a nice grade to, but maybe aren't getting enough attention for how nice of a draft they had. And it started with their first pick, 8th overall. They took wide receiver Drake London out of USC. I told you guys, the number one wide receiver in this class, he was the first wide receiver off the board for a reason, and it's because you can't coach size. A lot of the wide receivers in this draft class were talented, but none of them had the combination of size and talent that Drake London has. 6'4", 220. London knows how to use it, man. This is a guy who bodies DBs, bullies undersized DBs, high points the ball. He can climb the ladder. He's got an awesome ability to jump and pick the ball out of the air. Big, strong hands, big time athlete. He can win outside or in the slot. Really savvy route runner, knows how to create space. Even though he doesn't have elite speed, he knows how to separate from defensive backs. He's going to be a mismatch nightmare, guys. And when you look at the Falcons, after losing Calvin Ridley and Russell Gage, this pick makes perfect sense. Home run, Drake London in the first round. Now, they took a really underrated player in Arnold Ebikete, the edge rusher from Penn State, with their next pick. This is a top 30 player, in my opinion. He had a first round grade by a lot of different analysts. At pick 38, it's a nice value pick. I think he's a guy that's going to instantly upgrade that pass rush. He should be a day one starter as well, so a nice pick there with Ebikete. Now, later in the second round, they took another guy that I was really high on, and that was Troy Anderson, the linebacker from Montana State, one of my favorite linebackers and favorite small school guys in this entire draft. He ran a 4.42 40-yard dash. He's got NFL size, NFL speed, versatile, athletic. Now, some people think that he could be a special teams contributor as well. I definitely think he's going to fill that role for them, as well as being a day one starter at linebacker. And some people even think he might be able to find a role on the offense. That's how good of an athlete this guy is. Really underrated prospect who flew under the radar a little bit, playing at a small school, didn't get the national attention that a lot of these other guys did, but he's a big time player. Now, the Falcons also took Desmond Ridder, the quarterback from Cincinnati. Not a guy that I'm as high on as some analysts, but with the 74th pick overall, it's hard to argue that it wasn't a good value pick. I understand the selection. Now, I don't love the pick because I would have taken Malik Willis. He was still available there. Just a way better prospect, way more upside. I still can't get over the fact that he was the third quarterback taken in this draft, and I'm just absolutely amazed at how far he slid in this draft. A raw prospect, but just way, way more upside than a guy like Ridder. But like I said, taking a guy who a lot of people thought could be possibly a late first, early second round type of player for a team that has some question marks at the quarterback position, and getting a guy that late definitely makes sense. So I like the pick, don't love it. Now, like I pointed out, I loved the first three picks that the Falcons had in this draft. I think they hit it completely out of the park. So it was hard to make a best pick selection here, but I'm going to go with Troy Anderson, the linebacker from Montana State. Like I said, just a really good athlete and a guy that I think is going to be a big impact player day one for the Falcons. Worst pick for me is probably Desmond Ridder, only because, like I said, I would have taken Malik Willis there. And I'm going to give the Falcons an A-. I thought it was a really solid draft. I love a lot of their picks. I thought they did a really nice job in this draft and filled some holes at positions that they needed to fill. Quite frankly, it probably would have been an A grade if they would have taken Malik Willis instead of Ridder. That's the only reason I bumped him down to an A-, but a really good draft by Atlanta. Now, shifting gears to a team that didn't have a very good draft. Like I said in the intro, a couple teams crushed it and a couple teams really left me scratching my head. One of them was the Carolina Panthers. Now, not having any day two picks in a really deep draft class because you traded them away for Sam Darnold, that really hurts. And for a team with a lot of holes and a team that's trying to build this roster back up, it has to be factored into my grade here. When you look at what they did in this draft, they got really lucky the way the board fell and were able to land arguably the best offensive tackle in the draft at number 6 overall with Ike Ikonkwo from North Carolina State. We've talked about this guy on the podcast the last couple of weeks. Not an ideal frame for an NFL left tackle, but this kid is a beast and he doesn't have any glaring holes in his game. He's a really great run blocker and a really underrated pass blocker as well. And a guy that I think, quite frankly, people were shocked was available at 6. Now, the rest of the draft for Carolina is where it gets ugly. They traded up for Ole Miss quarterback Matt Corral at 94 overall, but they had to give up pick 137 and a third-round pick next year. Now, Matt Corral was my number 2 quarterback, but that was in a weak quarterback class, so it's not like I think he's great. Now, he's coming off of an injury, he's undersized, and he's a project quarterback with some upside. I like the quick release, I like the accuracy. He definitely has some tools, but I wouldn't have traded up for him, especially when you're in a full rebuild and you really need that draft capital. Didn't make a lot of sense for me. Later in the draft, they took linebackers Brandon Smith and Amari Barno. They were taken in the 4th and the 6th round. Now, Smith is a really limited player and just not a 3-down player. I think he's a guy that's really only valuable on early downs. And Barno is a really good athlete, but a really raw prospect that has a lot of developing to do. Outside of Ikonkwo, there's not much to get excited about in this draft for Carolina. And quite frankly, I expect Matt Rhule to be back in college football coaching after the end of this season. This roster rebuild has really not worked out for Carolina. I don't see it getting better anytime soon. And this draft certainly didn't help, or at least help enough. Best pick for Carolina, pretty obvious. It's Ikonkwo out of North Carolina State. Big time prospect. Like I said, really lucky that they were able to get this guy, because I think he's a 10-year starter and a guy that's going to play at a Pro Bowl level year one. Worst pick, I think it's got to be Matt Corral. Now, I understand taking a quarterback at that position. I think it's nice value getting a guy like that late in the draft when most people didn't think he'd be available. But trading up to get him, I just don't understand it. Like I said, you already have a lack of draft capital on a rebuilding team, and then you give up more of it for a project quarterback. I really didn't like what Carolina did. Just not a good draft. This thing is starting to get ugly. I think there's going to be a whole new regime in Carolina before you know it. A D grade for the Carolina Panthers. Not impressed. A team in the NFC South that I was impressed with was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, they traded back 6 spots to the first pick in the 2nd round and added a 4th and 6th rounder, which I think was just awesome work by GM Jason Light And with that first pick in the second round, they took Logan Hall, a guy that we haven't really talked a whole lot about on this podcast, but this guy is 6'6", 283 pounds, big physical kid, quick feet, really athletic for his size. He can play the three technique, line up inside or on the edge. And the Bucks, they really need some youth up front. This is an aging D-line. So I think this was a really nice pick by Tampa Bay. Get in a guy who could start week one and make a big-time impact, and he's going to be able to play all over that defensive line and offer a lot of versatility for them. So I think this was a really solid pick. And like I mentioned, I love the fact that they were able to get the guy they wanted, trade back a few spots, and add some more picks. It was just awesome. Later in the second round, they took Luke Gedecky, the offensive tackle from Central Michigan. Didn't expect him to go this early, but I think the plan here is to move him to the left guard spot. That's a hole on the roster, so it makes a lot of sense from that standpoint. Doesn't really have the length and size you're looking for to play tackle at the NFL level, but I think you kick him inside and he becomes a starting left guard for them and probably a pretty good one, so I like that pick. They also took running back Rashad White from Arizona State. This was one of the most underrated running back prospects in this draft. He's a physical running back, breaks a ton of tackles, can run guys over, and he had 15 touchdowns last season, so he's a productive player, just a really good all-around player. Another guy I liked was Cade Otton, the tight end from Washington. This guy is a four-year starter. Has good size, 6'5", 250 pounds. He can run well. He makes plays in the passing game. He's got nice hands. Really solid later pick from them. And I also really like cornerback Zion McCollum. I think this guy is a steal in the fifth round. Big time speed. He's got a long frame, 6'2". And he was a ball hawk with 13 interceptions in his college career. And quite frankly, if he played at a Power 5 school, I think he's a guy that probably gets drafted in the third round. He played at Sam Houston, so he got a little bit overlooked. But this guy's got NFL traits for sure. And I actually think he was the best pick by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in a class that had a whole bunch of good picks. Now, the worst pick for Tampa Bay was punter Jake Camarda out of Georgia, a guy who's got NFL talent as far as a punter goes, but he's inconsistent. And taking a punter in the fourth round, I'm just not sure there's great value there, especially for a guy that probably would have been there a couple rounds later. And in this draft class in particular, there was just so many good players on the board. I didn't understand taking a punter there, so didn't love that pick. But overall, this is a draft class for Tampa Bay. Didn't have a lot of wow players, but just a lot of really rock solid picks. Really like this class for Tampa Bay, A-. And last but not least, well, maybe they are least, because I really didn't like what the New Orleans Saints did in this draft. The Saints traded the 16th pick and their third round pick to move up just five spots and take wide receiver Chris Olave from Ohio State. Now, their passing game was terrible last season, so I get wanting to go after a wide receiver in that spot, but this class was loaded at wide receiver, and it was loaded in the middle rounds as well. So giving up a third rounder in this class just to move up a few spots, I just think they gave up a lot for a guy who probably would have still been on the board at number 16. Now, don't get me wrong, Chris Olave is a really good wide receiver. He's a smooth route runner. He's got good speed. He's got good hands. But there's no way you can convince me that he's a better prospect than Jameson Williams, the wide receiver out of Alabama, who went with the very next pick. Now, I like Olave, but I really don't like trading up for him at number 11. So I wasn't a fan of what they did there. Now, with their other first-round pick, they took Trevor Penning at number 19 overall. This is really the controversial offensive tackle from Northern Iowa. After losing Terron Armstead, they needed an offensive tackle. I get it. It makes sense. From that standpoint, it really does. But Penning is a guy who you either love him or hate him. It's really kind of weird when you break down his game. There's a wide range of opinions. He's a mauler. He's a physical guy. He's a strong guy. He's got a nasty edge to his game. He plays through the whistle, and I mean like almost to a fault. but he's not as polished of a player as these other tackles that were in this class. And quite frankly, most of the draft analysts that we've had on this show the last several weeks were just not a fan of him. Now, we did have a guy on that loved him, but most people felt that this guy was really getting overrated in the pre-draft process. Now, the Saints also took Alante Taylor, the safety from Tennessee. To me, this was a really big reach. He's just not a top 50 player in this draft. I think he's a guy that most people had projected to go one or maybe even two rounds later than he did. So wasn't a fan of that pick either. And when you look at what the Saints did, this is just a team that gave up way too much draft capital to come away with the fourth best wide receiver and the fourth best offensive tackle in this class. The best pick, I guess it's Chris Olave, even though I wasn't a huge fan of it. Now, I'm a fan of getting Chris Olave. I'm a fan of him as a player. And like I said, he's going to be a deep threat. He's going to upgrade the wide receiver room that desperately needs a spark. But giving up that much for him and taking him ahead of a guy like Jameson Williams just didn't make a lot of sense. So I guess that's their best pick, but kind of with an asterisk. Now, their worst pick, you probably guessed it, was Alante Taylor out of Tennessee. Not that he's a bad player, but just way too rich for my blood. I don't think he's ever going to live up to where they took him. He was a guy that has talent, but I don't think has any business being taken in the top 50. And there was, once again, so many good players on the board. I just think that was a big miss. And quite frankly, this entire draft class by the Saints was a big, big miss. Really not impressed with what they did. Yeah, you get a good wide receiver, a good offensive tackle, but what you had to give up to get those guys, I don't think was worth it at all. This is a team that's really acting like they're only a key player or two away from being in contention. And quite frankly, I just don't think they're even close. Didn't make a lot of sense to me. A lot of their picks didn't make sense to me. This is a D minus, and quite frankly, one of the worst drafts.
Pint Glass Football Podcast is presented by Better Edge, bringing the edge back to the bettors with no fee sports betting. At BetterEdge.com, you, not the books, set the price of betting lines so you can make bank. Better Edge is available in 45 states for real money sports betting. Play the game without getting played at BetterEdge.com.
Excited to be joined by Mark Dolgarian, who does research and analytics for NFL media and is with Optimum Scouting. Mark, thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure, Brad.
Mark, I'm excited to have you on. With your background and all the things that you're involved with the NFL and the Optimum Scouting, we're getting into this offseason now with the draft behind us, but we're going to get into the draft here in a minute. But what are you working on coming up in the, you know, these next few months here?
Well, yeah, we just finished up with a lot of the draft content, most draft content with NFL media. So it's definitely kind of the slower months coming up until training camp in August. You know, with Optimum Scouting, we are already dialed in on next year's draft. In fact, more than dialed in, we have pretty much all the grades ready to go to be QC'd. So we're already looking ahead to next year's draft, and we're probably well ahead of the curve, more so than maybe the media is. We're more aligned with the NFL teams and kind of their process and getting ready for the draft.
Yeah, it's never too early to start looking ahead, and that is awesome, because as soon as the draft's over, as excited as I am for the regular season and all that stuff coming up, the draft is just one of my favorite things in the world to cover, and I'm already excited to talk about next year's prospects. But so maybe next year we'll have to have you on again, because it sounds like you're already ahead of the curve on these next guys, which I know is going to be another exciting class. Now, like we touched on, you have a background in scouting, and like I said in your intro, you currently do research and analytics. So I'm curious, Mark, when you're evaluating these prospects, what are some of the key things that you look for from an analytics standpoint?
I do want to be clear that, you know, film number one is the most important thing that I look at with prospect. Analytics is more so, I use it more as a guideline, kind of a guardrail, if you will. So, you know, looking at their athletic scores, and we have ways of kind of figuring that out. Looking at their athletic scores, you know, making sure we're not wasting time on, you know, watching too much of these bad athletes, making sure we're looking at good athletes, NFL caliber athletes, and not necessarily just elite athletes, but NFL caliber athletes. And that's calculated from a variety of ways, from measurables, test scores. But we're also looking at production as well. So, making sure that they have the minimum requirements as far as college production goes. And it's not just, rushing yards or passing yards. If we're looking at a wide receiver, we might want to nail it down to his reps against press or his reps against, on certain routes or first against certain defenses. So it's kind of combining a lot of different factors from a production and athletic standpoint to give me a short list of who to watch and who to watch out for.
It kind of leads me perfectly, Mark, because it's interesting what you said there. It leads me perfectly into my next question here. We saw Trayvon Walker and Jordan Davis both go early in the first round, players that lacked the typical production that you might expect from early picks, but they have those measurements and those athletic traits of high-level NFL players. So you kind of touched on this, but what is your process when evaluating a player like that and weighing the measurements and the traits versus the production in the game tape? How do you decipher through that and really put emphasis on which one's more important?
Yeah, good question. So, let's take it back a few months before the combine, before Jordan Davis runs like a freaking wide receiver at the combine and he's jumping out of the gym and everything at 350 plus pounds or whatnot. Before we have all those numbers, sure, we do have, their junior day numbers from Georgia. And so it kind of gets rumored they're going to test really well during the pre-draft process. But even without all that information, you want to, again, look at the film and you want to look at what their assignments are and how they're impacting the game. Georgia, they ran a very unique type of defense. They ran a very disciplined defense, probably one of the more disciplined defenses I've seen in a long time. And a big reason why they were national champions, but they had these supreme athletes at really every level of their defense. And that afforded them to attack opponents in different ways. So without getting too much into the weeds, I see Jordan Davis and his sack numbers aren't great. Okay. Well, was he asked to tee off on the quarterback every time? No. Was, on pass downs, was he asked to one gap and, collapse the pocket every time, or was he asked to occupy gaps? And when they asked him to go after the quarterback, was he able to do that? So the answer to a lot of those questions was yes. Like they both showed, Trayvon Walker as well, they both showed the ability to get after the quarterback when they were asked to do it. They just weren't asked to do it so often because they have, five other guys on their defensive front that could do the same thing. So, Kirby Smart didn't. He didn't have one guy that he needed to tee off on the quarterback every time. He had a bevy of guys, so everybody kind of had their part in it. So it was really just zeroing in on what each player's assignment may or may not have been on. We don't have the playbook, we don't have the calls, but you can tell, if Jordan Davis was occupying two, maybe sometimes even three guys in a given play, that works well for the other guys who are premier athletes, who are premier pass rushers and who can get those one-on-one situations and that want a lot of games for them. So I guess, the most important thing again is film, trying to figure out what the goal of that defense was trying to do and where they fit. And then looking at the traits, do they have the translatable NFL traits to be able to say, okay, we want Trayvon Walker to be our DPR, designated pass rusher. When he is asked to be their DPR, is he successful? Yes or no? And in college, more times than not, he was very successful. And he won with power. He won with speed.
I think it's a really great answer. I think it's a really intelligent answer. And I love that you're looking at it from that standpoint and trying to decipher the schemes that these teams run and their assignments. And sometimes that doesn't always translate to production. And I think that's a really great in-depth answer there and really kind of explains why those two players in particular that I mentioned who had the awesome measurables, they had the show that they put on at the combine, how their draft stock really took off because of those traits. And a lot of these guys who break down the tape were able to see at a deeper level than maybe the average fan that, like you said, they weren't always asked to do some of those things that would produce big numbers. So I really like that answer, and it's a great evaluation by you.
their athleticism isn't always on display, you know, down to down. You get to the combine, you say, okay, well, we did see flashes of it. Do the numbers back it up? Did the athletic testing numbers back it up? And, you know, they definitely backed it up for Trayvon Walker and Jordan Davis. So that's reassuring. You know, that tells me, you know, when they were productive in college, you know, when they were running down quarterbacks or running backs in the backfield, like that matches up with their athletic testing numbers. So it was just kind of a check in the box once you get to that, to the combine and the pro days.
I saw that you did a pick-by-pick analysis for those mid to late round guys for NFL.com. Who are some players from that group that really stand out and that you think offer great value for where they were taken?
One of my favorites, and I mentioned this to Ben Fennell, he's with NFL Network as well, and he pointed out how impressed he was with Romeo Dubs' film, out of the wide receiver out of Nevada, who the Packers took in the fourth round. I liked him. I actually saw him in person. I'm an SDSU alumni, so I went to a couple of their games. I got a chance to go to a couple of their games. They're playing out here in LA for the time being. But I saw them play against Nevada, and I was really impressed with them. And one thing I came away with after that game was like his chemistry with Carson Strong. Carson Strong loved throwing to him. They found a matchup, they exposed the matchup, and they picked on this poor cornerback from SDSU all game long. In the red zone, deep, you know, middle of the field, everywhere, they picked on him. I think he was, this one cornerback was targeted like 12 times or something crazy. And it was his guy, and they just had this chemistry. And so, you know, you pop on the film, and he's not the most polished route runner, but for his size, and his length, he has such great movement skills, lateral movement skills, change of direction movement skills, great burst, can get over the top. He has enough speed to stretch the field and outstanding ball skills. He's mossing dudes left and right. So I'll preface this with saying I wasn't the biggest Christian Watson fan. I mean, I was much lower on him than maybe a lot of those in the media and, you know, maybe some teams. But as you talk about value and fit, and I'm looking at Aaron Rodgers and how he likes to connect with his receivers and what he values in his receivers. And I wouldn't be surprised if Dubs became a more favorite target next year than Christian Watson. The back shoulder stuff, the ball skills, the body control, the ability to create after the catch. To me, Romeo Dubs, that's a little bit better than Christian Watson. So I think that could be a sneaky surprise out of camp. I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of Aaron Rodgers' favorite guys out of camp.
Awesome. I love it. And I've had a lot of great guests on here leading up to the draft and covering the draft these last several weeks on the podcast. And that's a name that I haven't heard yet. So I really like that. And a guy that I'm going to have to dive into a little bit more, and a guy that people need to write down that name, because you're right, just kind of glancing at it on paper, I like the size, and I like what you said there about his ball skills and some other things that he's going to offer to the Packers. So I think that's going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on. Now, you mentioned that you covered the Shrine Bowl for the NFL, and you're also involved with the game with Optimum Scouting as well. So you got a really close look at the players that attended. And who from that game really stood out to you and made an impact on you firsthand?
Number one, I mean, the MVP of that week was going to be Kyle Phillips. This is some insider info. It was going to be Kyle Phillips. We were expecting the MVP of the game to be Kyle Phillips, but he didn't play in the game. He ended up opting out. He tore it up. I mean, nobody could guard him. Cat quick, you know, he's a slot only wide receiver. He has some punt return ability as well, but does it all. I mean, he blocks well. He just knows how to get open underneath. He's got the quickness. I've seen people compare him to Hunter Renfro. I don't know if he's Renfro. They're a little bit different stylistically. Everybody just kind of compares, you know, smaller white slot receivers to be the same guy. But Kyle Phillips really, really impressed, really, really helped his stock. Jelani Woods was 1A, 1B, it was Kyle Phillips and Jelani Woods. Jelani Woods actually had a touchdown in the game as well. So he kind of solidified himself as kind of the most impressive player all week. And he, another guy, like huge, huge catch radius, former quarterback, smart kid. Colts coaches, I'm not sure how familiar you are, but the coaching staffs were comprised of different coaches from different teams. So it wasn't just like one NFL team staff and another NFL team staff. It was a bunch of team staffs kind of combined to form both staffs. But the coaches for his team, two of them were from the Colts, and they compared him to Mo Alie-Cox, you know, for his ball skills and his, you know, his catch radius and his red zone ability. So he was really impressive. Those are the two guys that by far and away stood out that week.
Yeah, two players that I really like. And I guess it's not surprising that Jelani Woods ended up going to the Colts with their coaching staff having such a good look at him and being able to work with him firsthand. And that's really a lot of the value of these Shrine games and Senior Bowl games, where these coaching staffs get to really work with these players and see what they are up close before the draft process. And you can see that there's clearly a ton of value in these bowl games for evaluators and fans alike. Kyle Phillips is another guy that I really like. We talked about him on the podcast last week. Just a really savvy route runner, quick feet. You touched on it. I think he was a really great value for where he was taken, and a guy that I think can make an impact year one. So we know what team you get drafted to can often play a big role in the success or failure of a rookie in the NFL. So who are some guys that you feel landed in a perfect spot?
That's a good question. So number one, I think Kayvon Thibodeau landed in a great spot with the Giants. I love that fit. Wink Martindale, you know, I got some crap for it on I mentioned it on Twitter. And some former Raven, you know, some Ravens fans that had Wink Martindale, they were telling me, oh, it's a terrible fit. You know, he has his pass rushers drop into coverage. And I think he's creative enough to deploy Kayvon Thibodeau from a variety of attack alignments. And I think Kayvon Thibodeau is athletic enough to carry out different assignments. So I hope they move him around a little bit. I hope they don't just kind of tee him off from one place, and because he can play inside, he can shoot gaps inside and play off the edge. He can drop into coverage. I don't want him to major in that, but he can drop into coverage if you need him to, you know, in the flats or the shallow middle of the field. But I just think that was a great fit for, in my opinion, a top three talent in this draft. So it was kind of hard to miss, you know, misfitting Kayvon Thibodeau, but to me, that was one of the best fits that he could have went to.
I think you're right. I think it is a great fit and also tremendous value, like you touched on. I think personally, I had him ranked as my number one edge defender in this draft. I think he got a little bit underrated as the draft process went on. We kind of saw him drift from being viewed as a potential number one or two pick and then kind of slid to that number five spot and just added tremendous value for the Giants, because I think you're right. This is a guy that doesn't get enough credit for his versatility and the things that he can do along the defensive line. You're right. He's going to be good on the edge, but he can kick inside. And Oregon did have him drop into coverage from time to time as well. And I thought he did a nice job with that as well. So I think he's a much more versatile defender than people realize. And I think that's a great call by you.
Absolutely. And another guy, I'll give you a day two fit as well. And one of my favorite prospects in this draft was Penn State's edge player, Arnold Ebikidi, one of the better edge defenders in this draft. And he's with the Falcons. He's going to be playing under Dean Pease and Ted Monachino. Great fit for him. He's a little unpolished, but that's the place that you want to be if you need to refine some of that pass rush skill set. I think he has probably higher upside than guys like Aiden Hutchinson and Trayvon Walker. Don't be surprised if he ends up making a bigger splash than some of those guys, you know, a year or two from now.
Yeah, I think that's a great take by you too. And I know he's a guy that Mel Kiper Jr. of ESPN was really pounding the table for during this whole draft process. He was one of his guys, and he really raved about his skill set and upside as well. So he's a guy that I think is going to be much better than people realize. What team had a great draft that you don't think is getting talked about enough?
The Detroit Lions. I liked their draft a lot. Listen, you come away with Aiden Hutchinson, high floor guy. He's going to come right in and be productive for you. You get, it's probably the number one wide receiver in the draft, and Jameson Williams, who can not, I mean, he's obviously talented, but he also opens up everything for your offense. He gives Jared Goff and whoever the next quarterback's going to be, he's going to be a field stretcher for them. And I really like Joshua Pascal out of Kentucky. He's super disruptive. I think he pairs well with Aiden Hutchinson down on that defensive line. Dan Campbell's going to love those two young guys. And that's going to help everything behind them from their second level and the third level. I was a big fan of Kirby Joseph, who they took in the third round. He was one of the guys that didn't get a lot of love from the media and the mainstream, but really rangy safety from Illinois. And I think, you know, a year or two from now, he can make a splash as a starter with their. And then you go all the way down to late day three. They took Malcolm Rodriguez out of Oklahoma State, linebacker. They got an edge out of Jackson State and cornerback Chase Lucas out of Arizona State. I saw Houston and Lucas at the Shrine Game, so I was really familiar with those two guys. Lucas is a great lock. He'll be a great locker room guy, big personality, talented corner. Houston, he's undersized, but he's got some natural pass rush talent. So he'll need to make a name for himself on special teams, early in his career, but there's something there to him. You know, he's undersized, but there's something there to him. He's got that kind of natural ability to uncoil and work around the edge and create pressure. Super productive at the FCS level. I kind of raved about them. My favorite draft was the Ravens draft, you know, as they always do. I'm a Steelers fan, so, you know, it pains me to say it a little bit, but man, they draft so well. They just know what they want. They know they have traits that they look for, and they stick by their guns. I mean, to me, they got the best safety. They got the best, in my opinion, the best offensive lineman in the draft in Tyler Linderbaum. David Ojabo has starter traits. He's healthy. You know, he went to a great spot where they develop edge rushers as well. Travis Jones, I think he's a starter down the road. And then you go all the way down, Charlie Kolar and Isaiah Likely. They're kind of that. You got your Y tight end and your H-back or F tight end, who I think will see significant snaps. So just a lot of guys they found that can contribute, not only contributors, but starters for a long time. So they had my favorite draft.
I could not agree with you more. I thought the Ravens, in typical Ravens fashion, just absolutely crushed this draft. They let the guys fall to them and found tremendous value, not only in that first round with some of those guys you touched on, the best safety, the best lineman in this draft, but then they continued it with all those middle round picks that they had. They capitalized on a bunch of those guys as well. Just incredible draft. I think we're going to look back at this draft and see a ton of high-level players, Pro Bowl-level players, and a bunch of quality starters for this Ravens team in the next couple of years that came from this draft alone. I think they just completely hit it out of the park. But I also like what you said about the Detroit Lions, because you're definitely right. There's not enough media coverage right now on the Detroit Lions and how well they did. I thought they had a really nice draft. Aiden Hutchinson pick, like you touched on, really high floor guy. Maybe he doesn't have the ceiling of a guy like Walker or Thibodeau, but a guy that you almost certainly is going to come in and make an impact. And I think when you're drafting number two, having a safe pick, so to speak, and a guy like him isn't always a bad move. And I really liked the aggressive nature by going up and trading up for Jameson Williams, because like you touched on, maybe the best receiver in this draft, definitely the biggest home run hitter at receiver in this draft, and a guy that I think really adds some playmaking ability to an offense that desperately needed it. I want to jump to the quarterbacks. This was a fascinating quarterback class. It was viewed as down by most people in the media, and the NFL teams made that abundantly clear by where they drafted these guys. But who is most likely, in your opinion, to become a franchise quarterback from this class, or is there one, Mark?
Yeah, I this is an easy one for me. I think it's Malik Willis. I'm a traits guy, and to me, he just by far and away had the best traits. And I know there's more to quarterbacking than, you know, strong arm, you know, fast legs and all, you know, all that. I get that, but you know, his ceiling is just it's by far and away the highest of anybody in this class. And on top of that, you know, we did a lot of homework, you know, on all the quarterbacks. And Willis, I mean, the intangibles are what kind of set him apart from everybody else. And, you know, you talk about a guy who has traits and on the natural tools, and then you're not sure about, well, does he have the makeup? And with quarterbacks, it's so much of it is what's between the ears. And just based on what I've heard, he has all the makings of developing and maximizing his traits. You know, he loves football. He's insanely coachable. Everybody loves him. His teammates love him. If you're bidding the house on a quarterback, you really want to know what's between the ears. And just from everything that I've heard, you know, I'd have no problem, you know, betting the house on Malik Willis. Yeah. So I think the Titans, if we look back a couple of years from now and, you know, we have Malik Willis throwing to Treylon Burks and maybe Derrick Henry's still there, maybe not, but you know, that's a heck of a grab in the third round.
Yeah. I'm with you, Mark. I was completely shocked. And I think a lot of people were to see Willis slide as far as he did, not only to slide into the third round, but to be selected behind, I believe he was the third quarterback taken. I thought that was really surprising as well. And I feel like the Steelers had a great opportunity to take Willis there at the 20th spot and went with the safe pick in Kenny Pickett. And I think that's going to be something that could come back to haunt them. And I don't have anything against Kenny Pickett. I just think he's a very, very average prospect. He doesn't scream franchise QB to me, and maybe he'll prove me wrong, but I just don't, like you talked about traits, I don't see the high level traits with Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. He doesn't have those high level traits, but he has good traits. You know, everything's good. Everything's rock solid. And the ceiling's not that high on him, but maybe it doesn't need to be that high. Maybe they build around their defense again. Maybe they build, you know, George Pickens. Gosh, I'm blanking. Deontay Johnson and Najee Harris, and you know, maybe they're the guys that carry that offense, and all he has to do is get the ball to them. You know, like I don't see him as a guy who can, you know, weather the storm with his ability to make plays out of the pocket and make plays with his arm. I think he can keep him on schedule, which maybe that's all they're looking for. And in this class, you know, maybe playing it safe is better than taking a gamble. Like a Willis or a Corral or Ritter in the first round. So low ceiling, kind of a high floor type of guy. And that's really all you can ask for in this draft. I'm not totally mad at the pick, and I really do hope it turns out well. And I don't think he's a bad player at all. I mean, he's got a lot of tools to work with, and he landed in a great spot. You know, it's all about your landing spot, and the Steelers are up there, non-biased, but the Steelers are up there as, you know, one of the top franchises in most stable franchises in the NFL. So if you're a quarterback, you want to go to that stable type of environment.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said there. I think your take was absolutely spot on. I think the high floor is completely valid. I think the low ceiling is probably what scares some Steeler fans. And I think when you look at the rest of the division, that's what would scare me the most as a Steeler fan. Now you bring in Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson, and Joe Burrow. Kenny Pickett just doesn't fit in that group. When I look at the rest of that quarterback group, I'm thinking, boy, there's a lot of special on all those other teams, and I don't see a lot of special with Kenny Pickett. Now, I see a guy, like you said, that will probably play in the NFL for 10 or 12 years. I just wonder if most of it's going to be holding a clipboard. And so from that standpoint, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out in Pittsburgh, but everything you said is spot on. And with a stable organization and all the weapons and how well they draft the rest of their team, as far as the defense and the playmakers they put around him, there's a good chance that he could succeed at a high level just based on the fact that Pittsburgh is so rock solid and has a future Hall of Fame coach, but time will tell. Mark, 5 years from now, what will we remember most about this draft?
That's a good question. Well, we might still be talking about how bad of a quarterback draft it was. I hope not. You know, I think, you know, some of these guys, their ceilings are interesting. You know, I hate keeping it on quarterbacks, but I know that's what people like to talk about. But it's true. The theme of this draft was it's kind of funny. It was kind of like the separation of church and state. There is the separation of media and the NFL. You know, what did the NFL think? What was the media thinking? And the media hyped up a bunch of day three quarterbacks for about 3 months, or day two quarterbacks. I'm sorry. And so I think we're gonna be talking about how that panned out, and was the media right? Was the NFL right? And I hope the media was right. You know, I hope that, I mean, Matt Corral's got some exciting traits as well, man. He's, the way he moves is processing and his twitch, the urgency which he plays the game, is really exciting. And that could pay off with the Panthers, who need a quarterback soon. So, and then Desmond Ritter, is he quarterback of the future for the Falcons. You know, he's, to me, he's got as much of upside as Marcus Mariota does there. So I just think the main theme is really just going to be who was right in this draft. Was it the media who hyped up all these quarterbacks as better than they're made out to be? Or is it the NFL who knew all along, you know, they were going to have day two, day three types of careers, and the media needs to learn?
I think that's such a fascinating take. I think you're right about that, because most people that cover the draft, and like you said, the media and a lot of analysts and writers, we knew this class was down from a lot of prior quarterback classes. We knew it wasn't a star-studded class, but I think most of us still thought that there'd be at least a couple guys taken in the first round instead of one. I think a lot of us thought that most of the other quarterbacks in this class would probably be second round picks, maybe early second round picks, and none of that played out. And I think one of the most fascinating aspects of that is, I think in years past, we've seen, even in weaker quarterback classes, we've seen NFL teams reach because of the quarterback position and how important it is. We've seen teams jump up, move up, or overdraft quarterbacks that probably should have went in round two or three, get drafted midway through the first, or even in the top 10 when they had no business being drafted there. Maybe the NFL is learning from those past mistakes. I'm not sure. Maybe it was a combination of just being a really deep class at so many other positions, but it's definitely fascinating. It'll be fascinating to see how it plays out. But I know one thing that played out well here today was having Mark Dulgarian on the show. Once again, he's joined us. He does research and analytics for NFL media and is also with Optimum Scouting. Mark, thank you so much for coming on the show. Great, great stuff today.
Yeah, it's great being on. Great, great conversation.
All right, that's going to do it for today's episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it, PGF Nation. Going to be back next week with more great guests, more NFL draft coverage, and more draft grades to come. So hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter @PGF Podcast.